This is David Williams again, interviewing Judy. It's still the 7th of March 2014, and Judy's going to talk about her childhood in the village. Judy, I understand you came to Great Witley in the 1940s. Would you like to tell us about your memories of childhood in that period?
I think I was a very lucky person. We had a wonderful childhood. My mother, of course, was the postmistress, so she was always busy. We came in 1944, and of course my father, who worked at Cadbury's, wasn't allowed to leave until 1945. So I soon made friends with Helen Pyatt, who was about my age. And we roamed freely all over the village. We were always made welcome at Wardsgrove Farm, which was then farmed by the Rutter family. And we used to tease the boys or see what her brother and my brother were doing. That was Colin and John. I used to deliver telegrams. My favourite place, of course, was East Hope Farm, because you got sixpence for walking to East Hope Farm. And Mrs. Randall always gave you a cup of tea and a piece of cake, and very often a duck egg to carry home. I don't like duck eggs, but they went into cakes. And you very often came home with a few fleas as well.
So that would be Harry Randall's parents, wouldn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Mrs. Randall was lovely, and Mr. Randall was very shy, and if I was sitting there, you'd sometimes see him peeping round the door, but he never came in, never. And they had an old English sheepdog called Titch, which was quite a large dog, but I think it had been the run to the litter, and hundreds of cats. But Mrs. Randall was always glad to see somebody. And in those days, they didn't have mackintoshes, and if it was raining, they used to wear sacks over their shoulders, hessian sacks, which is something you don't see now. Sometimes Helen Pyatt and I would go up the Abbey Hill, the top of where the hill climb was. Just over the other side was a place we called the Haunted House, and it was an empty cottage that was used as a cattle store, hay store, by Mr. Dudley from Aberley, that's Lucilla's father. And if he saw us in there, he would shoot at us with his 12-bore. But we called it the Haunted House because apparently at some time somebody had chopped his wife up with an axe in it. But I don't know how true that is, but that was the story. And then the other thing we did, we belonged to the guides, Helen and I, which met at the Scout Hut, which used to be on Mr. Stonehouse's land, just more or less opposite the Abbey Hall gates. And Mrs. John Brinton ran it, and Lucilla Dudley was the brown owl. Mrs. Brinton was an awfully good guider. She taught us all the, we used to learn the names of the wildflowers and the trees. And I never forget Mrs. Brinton saying to me once, we were on a hike in Astley Woods, and I said, oh, I can't get down that steep bank. Nonsense, she said. There's always a way. Why don't you sit down and slide? Which is exactly what I did. But I never forgot Mrs. Brinton saying that. If you can't do something one way, you can usually do it another. Then I went to Starport School. I went to Whitley School for about 18 months, I think. But then my dad sent me to Starport because I failed the us. And that's where I made friends with Pauline Goodwin, who lived at Abbey, because she'd done likewise. And she was also in the guides, and she's a lifelong friend. Both our mothers, they were friendly too, and they were both called Muriel. So Pauline always had a Saturday job. Every Saturday morning, she had to churn the milk to make butter in the old-fashioned wooden churn. Elizabeth did the housework, and Eileen helped her dad on the farm. It's Lurton's farm where they lived.
Judy, you told me once about exploring Home Farm when it was unoccupied and someone coming and catching you out.
Yes. That was Helen and I again. We were looking round, as we did, and we noticed there was a window not quite pole dance. So we climbed into Home Farm and had a good look round. Then we looked out the window, and there was one of the Mr. Owens. It was either Wilfred or Howard, walking around with his 12-bore tucked under his arm. And I said, oh, we can't get out now. We can't possibly. Because you didn't mess with either of the Mr. Owens. And of course, they actually farmed that land during the war because they worked for the war rag. And I guess they were also looking round. But we didn't do any damage. We just stayed there for a rather long time until he'd finally gone. Because, you see, there were such a lot of rabbits everywhere. Everybody walked around with a 12-bore. I mean, our Saturday lunch, once my brother was old enough to shoot rabbits, which he was doing about, by the time he was about 12, was rabbit pie. John gutted it. I skinned it. And Mother made the rabbit pie because she didn't like touching meat very much. But I had to skin it and joint it. And I used to preserve the rabbit skins by rubbing them with saltpeter. But I didn't know the next stage, so they're always very stiff and never use them for anything. That's what it was.
What a lovely memory. A real family effort then for Saturday dinner.
It was. So that's what we had. That went on until we got mixed mitosis, and now John and I don't touch rabbit.
Interesting. I expect a lot of people are like that.
Yes.
Just going back to Home Farm, was that the sort of time that the trees that we now see on Woodbury Hill were planted?
No, that was just after that. The Home Farm belonged to Mrs. Lees, and her son Norman was in the Air Force and was in Canada, and she wanted him to farm that land. And when he came back from out of the force, he moved into Home Farm and he married a girl called Pam, who'd come to work for him as a dairymaid. And he also employed young people mainly. And because he also owned Walsgrove Farm at this time. So Pam and Norman lived in Home Farm. And then in a quarter of Home Farm, there was another Pam, Jones, and another girl who was working there. They had a little flat. And then the boys all lived in Walsgrove Farm with a housekeeper. And the boys were the two kings. And one or two more, I don't remember all of them. It was great fun to go up there. And Pam King is, as she is now, she married Philip King. And she's still a friend of mine. And they've farmed all their lives. But Norman Lees was really a boffin. So finally he sold up after a time. But they did clear Woodbury Hill and ploughed up quite a lot of it on the top inside the British camp.
I remember as a child Frank Tyler telling me that it used to be like barren heathland up there and a lot of flies, he seemed to recall from his childhood.
Yes, I think it was John Brinton bought Woodbury Hill after Norman Lees sold it. And he, and I think it might have been Mr. or Major Pilling, had actually planted it up with a variety of trees, and I think won an award for the excellence of the planting.
Oh, right, yes.
Because some trees you could cut down much earlier than others when the others had grown.
When I first started work, I worked in agricultural engineering, and I went to a tree nursery at Bridge North. And the gentleman asked me where I came from, and I said, oh, Great Whitley. And he said, all the trees that are planted on Woodbury Hill came from this nursery. Uh-huh. And that was at Quat, on the Kidderminster Road, out of Bridge North.
Oh, David, I can see you're looking at the picture of what was Coombe's that Dad and Mum built for their retirement in the 1960s. 62, I think it was, when it was finished. It was built in the orchard of the post office, the top orchard, because the orchard mainly contained damsons, but it did have a few pears, and quite interesting old apple trees, because Mr. Prattley's best friend was Mr. Young, the head gardener at Whitley Court, so we did have some really nice flowers and things. Anyway, The damsons were the main crop in the two orchards because, of course, not only did you make jam and bottle them, but the main buyer of damsons in those days was the dye manufacturers. And they would come round and very often look at your orchard before the damsons were even set on the trees. And they would say, right, penny a pound, £6. That was a lot, mind. And so you'd agree to sell them, the damsons, because it made grey dye if you put it with alum mordant. Turns into grey.
Did they provide pickers, or did you have to pick them?
Oh, no, we picked
them. You picked them, all right.
We picked them. Sixpence for £12 or so, it was what we earned, or threepence. And then, of course, my dad kept bees, and he started a big group with Mr. Geoffrey Spire from Barrow Hill. That's the great Whitney beekeeping group. They used to have their meetings in our sitting room. And some of the founder members was Honor Banks, Mrs. Talbot from Red Marley Orchards.
Jim Rollins, was he a member?
Yes, but later on. Mrs. Turbot from Aberley. Well, there was, I can't remember all of them, but there was about half a dozen to start with. And then my dad was friends with the Worcester Bee Group, and they rented a field in Mid Wales at Tilly Bryn, and we could take our bees in the autumn to get the heather honey. And Dad used to, well, sometimes he went with Mr. Richards, who was at Park Farm, and he would get up about 6 o'clock in the morning and take all the bees and let them out and have a picnic as well. But you didn't guarantee you'd get any heather honey. It just depended on the weather. It was lovely and it was quite thick, and Dad used to sell that. When the Elms started up as a hotel, he used to sell it to the Elms because they liked it for their afternoon teas.
So I can recall Dad having a number of beehives or colonies of bees in what looked to me as a child like a bee shed, for want of a better word, on the path, just to the side of the path that used to go up from the Stourport Road to the post office.
It meant that you could keep the bees, they were a bit warmer in the winter, and you could look at them under cover, and yet their sort of entrance was outside, so you didn't get quite so many bees around your head when you were looking at the bees.
I see.
And taking the honey, or, you know, generally examining them. Because our big problem was that my mother was very allergic to bee stings. If it hadn't been for Doctors Johnson, Walter and Paul, she wouldn't have lived to be 95, because she used to collapse unless she got some adrenaline injected in. So then finally, Dad took all his bees and kept them on other people's land. He kept some at Di Banks's, and some at Joan Banks's and Honor's, well, all over the place. Oh. As Dad got older, he needed more help, because just to carry the hives and the honey. So Jim Rawlings showed an interest. So Dad taught him all he knew, and of course he built his own little honey shed. And now of course Ray does it.
That's right.
So it's surprising how it all goes on. And certainly when Dad had to give up, by the time he got about 95, he couldn't do it. And I think he gave a lot of his stuff to Jim. His extractors and all the equipment that you need.
But, yes, the Great Whitley Beekeeping Group is still going. I have a friend who keeps bees.
Really?
And he tells me they meet at Pensix Village Hall now, of all things.
They? When Dad finally gave up, they did make him a life member. But nobody goes on forever.
No, that's for sure.
I did do beekeeping when I was in the Guides, but I too am allergic to bees, so I always keep an EpiPen in my possession.
Best to keep your distance.
Another tale that we heard was that where Pat Payne used to live in Woodbury Hill Cottages, when they lived on the top there, after they left, there was a chap called Hart came to live there. He was either just come out of the army or the navy. and he used to keep hens. And one night in the summer, his hens started going bananas, so he gets up to see if there's a fox having fun in his hen pen. And there wasn't. But what he actually saw was a ghost of a Roman soldier walking along. He said it was right. Now, he wasn't the sort of man that you'd expect to tell a tale like this. But that's what he said. So I don't know, that's just sort of between his house and East Hope Farm.